Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider, and you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the Godfathers of Podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. And like the lady said, my name is Donnie, and my tag team partner, who's with me each and every week that we do this damn thing, he is the Jordan to my Pippen, the Magic to my Kareem. He is the Larry Legend to my Kevin McHale. That is Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell. What up, Tid?
That has to be the worst one ever.
Why? Why? I called you Michael Jordan.
To your Pippen? Are you... Nuh-uh. That's when that shit got personal.
What was your problem?
I can't fill those shoes. I can't never possibly. No way.
You're getting mad for getting too much hype.
Bro, you want to know what kind of knowledge I have on the game of basketball? You could have just said I was like the guy in the mascot suit. To your Pippen. That would have been better.
he's the Rafael Arujo to my Yogi Stewart. How about that?
Those aren't even words, but we're gonna go with it. I got you.
I want to make a quick shout out. The new theme song that debuted on the show a couple weeks ago, of course, it is off the new album Vigilante by our bro Danny O. I made a mistake a couple weeks ago, Ted. I mentioned that Dan's single Cleanse My Soul off the new album had gone to number one on college radio in Canada. I was mistaken. It was college radio in the United States. Okay. So congratulations to our bro, Danny O, whose new album is Making Noise. If you haven't already got it, go to dan-e-o.com for some legit old school feeling hip hop. That record is just a banger from track to track to track. Also, quick shout out, blackborkusa.com. You can see I am wearing yet another blackborkusa.com hat. And I've said this before, and if you haven't already picked up on the gimmick, here it is. Every single Black Bork USA hat has the ability to change the patches on the front. And you can do custom patches like my Godfather's a Podcasting one right here, or you can just get whatever you want on your hat. So they have a different variety of hats, different styles, different colors, and the number of patches they have available on their website are limitless as well. You can just make your own. Go to blackborkusa.com. Tell them the Godfather's a Podcasting sent you. And finally, Tid, are you still rocking your Baronial products?
I'm almost out. I am out of soap. I am almost out of the wonderful oily elixir.
We will have to touch base with our friends at Baronial Beard. And you know what? Someone who I think would benefit from these products, although his beard is pretty on point, but maybe he would enjoy a change in his regimen, is our guest that joins us tonight. Tid, what do you say we bring him in?
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time right now for the big hello. And this man was a four-year starter at Baylor. And as a senior, he averaged 18-10, which led to him being drafted 22nd overall to the Clippers in 1998. Over the course of his career, he also played for Cleveland, Philly, Milwaukee, Sacramento, Portland, Phoenix, and Memphis. And he spent some time playing overseas. In 2013, he was elected to the Baylor Bears Hall of Fame. He's also got two daughters who are NCAA national champions in volleyball, and one of them will be representing USA at this summer's Olympic Games in Paris. Ladies and gentlemen, he's got the mindset of a winner. Don't call him late to dinner. His daughter's got that dog within her because they learn from this man, Mr. Brian Skinner.
How you guys doing?
How are you?
For you to think of that one right there. It's low. I'm good. Blessed. Definitely blessed.
I guess so, man. Like, First and foremost, let's talk about the very topical news. And I just mentioned it in the intro. You made a comment on your social media this week about your daughter, Avery, getting a chance to go and represent her country at the Olympics. What does that do for you, man? Like, how are you? Must be on cloud nine right now.
You know what? Be honest with you, it's just a process of how long it took her to get through there. You know, 17 years of preparing for something. You know, Usain Bolt said it best. He goes, "You know what? I practiced 4 years for 11 seconds." That's what I did. 4 years for 11 seconds. She did 17 years with this opportunity. For me, it's a proud dad moment, definitely. I'm not an Olympian. I played against the dream team, but I never made it to the Olympics. So I don't think it's soaked in for her yet. It hasn't hit her yet. For me, I understand how big it is. You know, I told her she had, you know, national champion, first team All-American. I said, all that's going to be ended with United States Olympian for the rest of your life. You'll have that title. So, It's definitely humbling to watch the process and to see what these girls, these young ladies go through rigorously day in and day out. It's completely different than AAU. It's completely different. There's loyalty in volleyball. AAU doesn't have any loyalty. No, they're all over the place. But, you know, they put this work in. They put a lot of work in to get where she was. And, you know, I'm speechless. I just kept saying, congratulations, congratulations. And she called me four times. I was out of pocket for a while. And I'm looking like, why do I have four missed phone calls? Of course, she got me on the fifth one. So she was persistent. She was persistent. But when she told me, you could just see her eyes light up.
That's amazing, man. So are you making plans to get out to France?
That is the plan.
Okay.
That is the plan. I have so much stuff going on right now. I know people say, hey, you got to go. So that is the plan. We're just trying to work on the logistics. We got little small ones right now. And, you know, you can't just be like, here, have a can of beans and, you know, some soda and, you know, fend for yourself. We'll be back in a week or so. It's going to take a little bit of planning, but that's the ultimate goal, is to be able to watch her perform and do something that, you know, I guess it's less than 1%. It's less than 1%. I would like to know what that percentage is. You know, I put that on my podcast, put that on your podcast. But, you know, it's definitely less than 1% to be able to do that. You're talking about 12 women out of the country that are able to represent their country in a sport that's constantly and consistently growing, you know, day in and day out.
It's crazy. And I can tell you, Tid, I know you want to jump in, but I just want to throw this in. When you talk about the small percentage of people that get this opportunity, a friend of this show, she's been on this show a couple of times. She's a Canadian national boxing champion. She's been a boxing champion for the last couple of years and was rated as one of the top two or three in the world at her weight class. And she was on track to go to Paris. And as of last weekend, the Olympic dream is over for her because she lost in a qualifying fight. And it is absolutely heartbreaking. She's been training for this for years. Now she's like, well, I'm not sure if I'm going to hang up the gloves or get ready for the next Olympics. Right now is not the time. 4 years.
It's a clock. You know, you're looking at 4 years.
Yeah.
Preparation. And right before it happens, it has to be perfect. Nobody cares what you did the first 3 years.
No.
They don't care about 3.5 years. You know, you got to get to that right when you're qualifying, and it has to be flawless. It has to be on point. And people don't understand the mental tenacity that it takes and the resiliency to get up and prepare for something. You know, let me take off 2 years and then I'll work out the next 2 years. It's not like that. They're consistently working out every single day for this one opportunity.
Yeah.
I feel like it's got to be a lot more than just the 4 years, though, especially for yourself, because this has been a process ever since your girls were little children. You know what I mean? It had to be those waking up, going to camps, those losing weekends for yourself to be able to be there for them. And now seeing this thing come to full maturity, it's got to be, I mean, I can't imagine the joy that it brings you, as a father. But the question is, what is going to happen after that? Where does it go from there? You know what I mean? Like, do you guys do the tour together?
Well, I mean, let's think about this. If you open up a photo album and you look in that photo album, what do you normally take pictures of? Happy moments, right?
100%.
But it's those sad moments that you don't record that gets you to that next happy moment. You know, it exists, but it's not documented right now. People look at all the flashing lights and they look at your name up on banners and posters and on the TV and on media and social media and, you know, news-based media. It is the days in the gym where nobody's clapping for you. Nobody's patting you on the back. Nobody's telling you good job. Those are the times that it's ugly. You get frustrated. You get pissed off. That gets you to that recorded moment like this for her to be named to the USA volleyball roster. Behind the scenes, people don't really understand what it is. And, you know, now we talk about it. You have a lot. Everybody has a mixtape. Everybody has, you know, a highlight tape. Everybody wants a highlight tape. And when I grew up, you had to be the best of the best. And if somebody made you one, then you know you had made it. But now it's so diluted right now. And I get it, but it's not a feel-good situation, which, you know, when you start looking at professional sports, you are looking at that 1% right now. You're looking at the 5,300, you know, NBA players. I can talk about that because I know about that. But 5,300 NBA players that have played in the last 75 years. When you start looking at it, you know, it is an elite based, and you're looking at longevity of 3 to 4 years average of playing, you know, and most people are out, and you see guys that are playing 20 years now. You see guys that are playing 18 years, 15 years. As we evolve, the sport's evolving, but people are evolving. Sizes, they're getting faster, they're getting quicker, they're getting taller. You know, you have a 7'4", you know, 1 through 5 player right now who people thought was going to struggle his first year, and he's come out and played and did things that people didn't even think that he could accomplish.
Yeah.
But it's just it is. It's a lot of missed Christmases, a lot of missed Thanksgivings, it's a lot of missed birthdays, it's a lot of traveling, you know, no prom. You know, someone said that, like, I didn't go to any prom. I know Ames said it from UT when they did an interview with her. She's like, I didn't go to prom. I didn't go to homecoming. I missed Christmases. I was on the road. I was traveling. And those are the things. It's going to sacrifice. It's going to cost you something. Family time, it cost me a lot. It cost me my family. You know, I missed birthdays, Christmases, Halloweens, graduations. I didn't go for that time. Now I'm trying to make up for it, which I'll never make up for it. But nevertheless, you know, people don't really understand the dedication. I don't feel well. Well, if it's game 7 right now of the finals right now, would you play? Yeah, I'd play. Then there's your answer right now. You don't want to go to practice, go to practice. And that's the stuff.
Or more importantly, and this is my question, because you'll know this firsthand, does volleyball have an Allen Iverson? You know what I mean? Do they have that character?
Practice?
You know what? I'm not going to say it. You're not going to get me to say it. You won't get me to say it. I won't do it. But I have some players, and you do like anything. You do like college, AAU. For the people who don't cheat and play up or reclass 5 times, you know, when you have that true talent, you don't want someone that's 17 playing 13-year-olds. That just doesn't work. But there are some girls that are the upper echelon. I mean, it's in the NBA. It's in the WNBA. I mean, it's in pickleball if you really want to go there. You know, it's everywhere. There are some girls right now that are just a whole nother level. But I'll say this. It's a team effort. You can't win with just one person. It's not going to happen right now. You have to have a good collective amount of people are behind you that understand exactly what their jobs and responsibilities are. Leave your egos. You know, humble yourself, leave your egos at the door right now. And the bottom line of it's, you know, more we instead of kind of me. Now, there's no I in team, but there isn't win. You know, there's going to be an opportunity for that. But there are some girls that stand out that are dominating the volleyball world right now. And people that are in volleyball know exactly who I'm talking about, but they're out there. It's not diluted. I don't think it's diluted. I think you have a lot of people that get a lot of different teams that put a lot of mediocre players on there, or good players and decent players, but when you start looking at world championships, you start looking at, you know, France and China and Italy, and you look at the USA, and then you look at, you know, all these Turkey, you look at all these teams right now, Poland, you have some girls that are upper echelon of that in terms of what they can do and how skilled and how developed they are, or they can jump out of this world, or their IQ on the floor is just completely amazing and unbelievable to watch. I mean, it's in every sport. It's even in the business world, you know, so it's there, but you won't give me the same names. I won't do it.
just to rewind a couple minutes, you made a comment, which I thought was funny, but I wanted to relay this to you before I ask you my question. You said nobody takes pictures of the sad moments, right? A few weeks ago, we had a guest on the show who's a now retired professional basketball player. He played overseas. He's a university head coach and works for the team he played for. When he was a kid in school, and I was one of his coaches, his dad, who was his biggest fan, was also the guy that kept him humble. And he was the guy that if we lost a tournament and he saw his son with a tear in his eye, he took a picture. Don't forget how this felt.
That's exactly how it is right now. You see too many of these young athletes right now. This is the separation. You know, I said this before, you know, good players want to be coached. Great players want the truth. But if you ever, and I'll say this, and I'm going to stand by it, if you ever see a player after a loss right now laughing and joking and kidding, and you don't see them abruptly upset and ticked off, I will say that I'm gonna say they're not winners. They'll never be winners. They will never, ever be winners. That's hard to say, because understand with what I do, I have some kids that are, they want to play because they love playing the sport, and you'll have the parents on the backside. Well, you know that junior is never going to play in the NBA. You know he's not going to get a Division I scholarship, but he loves playing and he works hard and this is his first passion. So you have those players, and I love that about that. Now, for those players, but you have so many players. If I walked into the room and said, how many of you guys want to be NBA players or go to college? And they all want to raise their hand up, every single one of them. And I just look at them, and I'm like, we lost that last game. You weren't even upset. It didn't even bother you. In fact, you called your friend and was like, hey, are we coming over? Are we going out to the pool? We're going to go swim today. We're going to have a good time. Like, I would be in the gym trying to correct why, even if it wasn't my fault right now, I'd be in the gym trying to do that. So you have a lot of different people out there, but that's why he made it. That's why he did what he did. And that's why he was successful in doing his sport right now. If his dad caught that tear, guess what? That means that it bothered him. You're not going to change until it bothers you, right? Don't fix it if it's not broken. There's a lot of people out there that are broken that don't think they're broken. They don't try to fix it. So they just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, and they get content and complacent, and it just doesn't work. I know I'm using a lot of big words. I'm sorry. I got to go back down, but it's just...
That's okay. It's that Baylor education. let me ask you this, because I've had this situation as a basketball coach, and I'm sure you have too, right? Where you lose a big game or a championship final or something, and then you have someone come up to you, whether it's a parent on the team, whether it's a player, whether it's another coach, and they're like, hey, what's the matter? And you realize, am I the only one that gives a shit? Am I the only one that's feeling this loss? Like, that absolutely makes me bananas.
You know what? It took my parents a little time to figure that out. It took my parents a little time to figure out, like, I don't really want to talk about it. I've done that with my daughters. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I've done that with them. And, you know, I told my 14-year-old that plays at Skyline, the same club that my two oldest went to. I told her, I'm like, I've pissed off my kids multiple times. I mean, if I told you half the stories that I've told Abe, I'm like, look, there's dad. I love you. I'm proud of you. Give an effort. You know what? I'm proud of you, whether you succeed or you're not. I said, but then there's also the other side of dad right now that is a competitor right now. I'm like, you're not doing everything you need to do right now. You know, from a physical standpoint, from a psychological, emotional standpoint, like, I've been honest. I remember Maddie, of course, it was the year it was this year or last year. It gets confusing after you win so many national titles. I think it was the second one.
That was a humble brag if I ever heard one.
Well, she has three. She has three. I mean, look, I don't even have one. I didn't get close to one. I didn't get close to 64. I didn't even get into the round. So, I mean, she has three. So I got expectations now. Like, if you don't win a national title, like, you failed. Like, you set the standard. I didn't set it. So, I told her one time, she had about eight errors. We were at home, and she had eight errors, and I looked at her, and I'm like, thank God you got the ball over this time. And she gave me the stink resting B face, and she looked at me, and she was so mad. She was like, Dad, I don't want to talk to you. She walked off. And so I called her and I was like, hey, like, what's wrong? She's like, you hurt my feelings by saying what you said right now. I said, sweetheart, I said, I'm going to tell you when you do something really good. I'm going to tell you when you do something really bad. I said, I want you to know I'm just going to be honest about it. Don't listen to what I'm saying. Take something from it. Get better from it. So, you know, I've ticked them off constant. There is one story when they won their first national title together at Kentucky right now. Believe it or not. You know, I don't think I've told anyone this. You guys would be the first ones. They were frustrated. They were super frustrated. And they were talking about going to the transfer portal, both of them. They were like, I'm done. And it was just a process. It wasn't the physical. It wasn't any kind of physicality in terms of injuries or anything else. It was emotional and psychological draining and the obstacles that were in front of them that, you know, we had to talk through and we had to work through, and it's convincing and manipulating the situation to get them to a point where they stayed. And that was the year they won a national title. And then Avery left and went to Baylor. Maddie stayed one more year. And then she went to UT. She won a national title that next year and then won another national title this past previous year. And it's gone from there. But those were the bad days that got them to this point right now. And there's so many more of it, but you know, people ask, how much do I need to do? Well, can't tell you that. One person like Allen Iverson, who never, ever, ever did anything else outside of it. He was just rawly talented. You had guys that were coming in trying to lift and get hundreds of thousands of extra shots. And this man could come in off the street right now, put some shoes on and play a full entire game. I've never seen anyone that talented and that precise and optimizing the maximum amount of ability that he had right now. He was one of those guys. I was, you know, 8-hour, 9-hour workout days, 5 days a week, 6 days a week. And, you know, he could just hang out all summer and come back in and play a full game. And it didn't look like he missed a beat.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just phenomenal just to watch. But some of these athletes are like this. You know, I don't necessarily believe that if you put a ton of work into it, you're going to get better than someone else because you put more work into it. That just doesn't exist. You know, hard work will always persevere when talent doesn't show up. And you have a lot of people that are talented out there. And bottom line of it is, now if you put a person that's talented with hard work, you know, you got the one person that outworked everybody, Kobe Bryant, Mr. Bean. You know, when you look at it, he literally physically, emotionally, psychologically outworked everyone to get to where he was right now.
Right.
I don't know if players still have that same work ethic. There's a few out there, but it was a norm back then.
Yeah. There's a lot more coddled athletes now, right? And you already made reference.
My stomach hurts. My foot hurts. I got to stop. I need a break. I'm like, go home. Like, this is not for everybody. It's not. And, you know, those are the people that are going to separate themselves. Yeah. After a while, you get to a certain level, everybody's good. Everybody's great when you get to that level. You know, if you look at the possible potential players, you know, even for the USA Olympics, and I asked in general, like, what are they looking for? Because I didn't understand some of the stuff that they did. I didn't. But they saw a bigger picture, and they're more in tune to that. But what are you looking for? You know, you have a ton of athletes that are phenomenal, and they know exactly what they do. They have humility. They know how to play the game. But for some reason, there's a certain thing that they're looking for. And that goes to each individual coach of, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to go with. And this is what I have to trust my gut instinct with. So, you know, that's how it is. But nowadays, yeah, kids are coddled. Kids expect, they rather put in the least amount of time and hope for the biggest amount of opportunities and success out of it. And the ones that are going to put their head down and just grind it out are going to be the ones that are going to be successful. So I'm just going to throw my girls in there. You know, that's what they did. I saw it. I saw it from when they had knee pads that were longer than their legs right now to where they are right now. It's definitely a dad moment. But I'll say for anybody that's listening to this, that's young and motivated, you got to work your butt off. You got to be obsessed with it. You can't casually date it. If you date it, guess what? You're not going to marry it. You got to marry it. You got to be completely obsessed with it, whether it's going to the gym or going to the movies. I'm going to the gym. That was me. You know, I'm going out with my friends. Or I'm going to get shots up. I'm going to get shots up. You know, I want to hang out. You know, dad, will you go out and shoot with me? My dad's like, I'm tired. Well, I'm tired too. I'm going to hang out in the house. No, I was outside. So when you find those players right now, and even if you do put, this is the crazy thing. You put all that time and effort into it, you might not get the results that you want.
Yeah.
You might not get the results, but at least you know you did everything physically possible that you could have done. So when you step away, you know that you left everything on the floor. It gives you a sense of accomplishment to a certain extent. Then you go on to do something else with your life and you be successful at doing that, but you've learned something from it.
You talked about earlier how there's, and you're kind of making a joke, but it was real, about how there's loyalty within the volleyball programs, unlike AAU. And I can tell you, yeah, and I could tell you, like, having coached AAU myself, I've been in the situation where you have the kid that's been deemed as a star player. He's top 10, top 50 in the country, and he thinks nobody can touch him. And you see him dogging it on our end of the court. So you pull him. And next thing you know, the parents are coming up to you saying, I think we're going to switch teams. You're going to switch teams because I pulled your kid for not playing D?
It happens. The thing about it is, you know, even with everything right now, when you start looking at the math and you start looking at Division I, Division II, Division III colleges, you look at how many teams they have, over close to 1,100 total. When you get to Division III, you're still looking at paying part of your scholarship. So Division I, Division II, you're still close to around 800. And then you look at how many players that are on scholarship right now. And when you start doing that, you start multiplying. And then you start looking at, there's what, 150 European players now in the NBA right now?
Yeah.
You know, that's almost half. Yeah. You know, the USA has figured out we're not dominating like we used to dominate now. There's a lot of skilled European players that are coming over.
Well, it's not just the volume, right? It's not just the volume of non-Americans. It's also the best players in the NBA right now are non-Americans.
Yeah. I mean, when you start looking at it over and over again, and it goes back to, you know, Europe, you have that 616. You have that 616 kind of mentality. You know, we come here to the States and be honest, we play six games and we might practice once. I know some teams that don't practice at all. I know some that practice once, some practice two, some practice three. When you get past three, you pretty much have a kid that's a single child and their parents have nothing else to do with their lives but be able to come to it. It's a lot. But, you know, when you do that, when you get to Europe, you know, they'll practice 6 days in a row and play one game. You know, and it's different. You're working on your fundamentals. You're more fundamentally sound. It's not just, you know, and you don't have a shitload of trainers giving 12 and 10-year-old boys NBA moves. Yeah. You know, they're showing them NBA moves right now. And I'm like, you know, Billy that's in front of you is not even reacting to that like a normal basketball player would be because it's way too advanced. He doesn't even know he's supposed to reach for the ball. He's not even reaching for the ball. In fact, he hasn't moved more than a foot right now. So you just did that for no reason whatsoever. So, I mean, you have a lot of different things with that. You know, for me, especially with my organization, I try to teach the fundamentals. Some people don't like that. I'm not going to clip wings. I still want the individuality, but I still want the individuality within a system. And that's just how it is. Even in the pros, you have a playbook that's this big. Now you might only run maybe 20 or 30 plays, but you got a playbook this big and you got to know it. Regardless, it could be on page 438 right now. You need to know that play, you know, Black Hawk down on 438. And if you don't, you're not really a professional. So when you start doing that stuff, you know, I don't believe in just letting my kids just run around and just shoot and play and run. Like, it's a draw and kick system. It's a trust system. It's a buddy system, a dribble handoff, a pitch, you know, a draw. Do you pass it? Do you kick? Can you shoot a right, left-hand floater? All these different things. But like I said, you know, it's different. And but no, there's zero loyalty in AA. You have some. I'm not going to say zero. You have some that are loyal in terms of what they do and understand they have a good system, a good coach, or I just don't like this player. I'm going to go elsewhere. You know, AAU is they're trying to treat it like NIL right now. But what you got to understand, too, is this NIL, these coaches aren't going to recruit you if they know that you're going to go. I mean, they've changed it so many times. If I can go into the transfer portal now, and if I go to the transfer portal now and I don't go somewhere else, you got to keep my scholarship and you still have to respect my scholarship. Well, these college coaches are going to say, if you're not a 4 or 5 star recruit, guess what? I'm not going to even waste my time on you.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go to JUCO and I'm going to let you figure it out. And then you're going to be gracious to get out of there, let you go to a D3 where you have to pay, you know, $15,000 of your tuition right now. And you're going to be so happy that we're going to try to give you a 1-year or 2-year scholarship. You're willing to do anything to get through it. So it's going to change, you know, 4 star, 5 stars, you know, are going to be the recruits. If you're a 2 or a 3, it's not going to be the same where, hey, you know what, you might get some interest in a lower D1 or upper D2. It's definitely changed. Obviously, I don't necessarily agree with how the NCAA has done everything, but I feel like there also should be a better structure with how they're going to divvy up this $20 million that they're going to distribute between all of these players. Some of these players are making more than your coaches.
Yeah.
So when that happens right now, how are you going to navigate that?
Well, it's like the pros. It's the same thing in the pros. I want to mention this because you were talking about the skill level of European players now. And one thing I noticed way back, I think it was 2002 or 2003, I got a chance to coach in a tournament that was being held in Spain. And I saw something that blew my mind, which made so much sense to me after I saw it. But at the time, Skinner, I had never heard of this before. And it's not every single European country, but a lot of the countries that are developing skill players do this. And that is when they're developing and training young kids, they don't play on a 10-foot rim until they're 9th graders, until they're that age. Up until that point, they're playing on 6 or 8 foot rims so that they can teach proper fundamentals on their shots. Because, you know, little kids, they'll two-hand chuck it. They'll do whatever. They'll build up bad habits because they're just trying to get it in the bucket. And sometimes they're just not strong enough. So they believe
It's a prey on the weak right now when you do that. That's why you see a lot of AAU teams now, they trap and they do full court presses.
Yeah.
You tell me any NBA game that do full court presses.
Right.
How many colleges do full court pressure situations, full court 2-2-1? I mean, they don't. The guys are too skilled right now. So you have a lot of coaches that run only zone. You're not helping your kid. No. Like, unless you go to 1 or 2 select colleges. I know Syracuse used to run, you know, a half court defense, but nobody runs a 2-3 or 1-3-1 or 3-2.
Or if they do, they're so gimmicky now, right? It's like a zone that turns into a man on a ball screen.
What are you going to do with little Bobby that is 3'2" right now and weighs like 45 pounds and you have a double team trap and the only guy that's open is 50 feet away? Like, you can't get the ball there. Can't do it. It's a turnover every single time.
It's barbecue chicken.
Kids, the fundamentals right now, you know, teaching your kids how to play man. It's what they're going, that's treating them up for success. Think about it. Yeah. Everything is a man. It's a 2-man game. It's a pin down game. It's how to come off of pick and rolls, how to come off of handoffs, pitches, all this. Nobody's running a zone right now. You don't run a zone. You might run NBA a zone where you got a guy that's in the paint because you have a guy that's not shooting, but then now everybody's shooting now. Even the guys in the first 9 years of their career that had 33 point opportunities right now, that next 4 years, they shot over 900 threes. Like, it evolves. So no one's just sitting in the paint right now. Like, I dare you to shoot at this lumbering 6-foot or 7-foot. But you don't have any 6'10 centers now. Like, you just don't have it anymore. Everybody, it should be power forward, power forward, power forward, small forward. shooting guard or point guard. You know, there's no centers really, and they don't play like that. Nobody really plays with their back to the basket, underneath the basket. Mid-range, they will every so often. But the game's changed. The game's evolved now. But, yeah, there's – I mean, let's just be honest. There's no loyalty in age. Put it like this. My daughter's in volleyball right now. If you walk into the gym and you see one of your teammates playing for another team, I promise you she won't be on the team that day. And then for her to go somewhere else, guess what? They'd be like, you can't do that. You're not supposed to do that. Like, that society has made it abnormal for you to do that. Like right. Me, what if my players came into the gym and they see me coaching another AAU team? Wait a minute. Or I'm playing against my team and I'm coaching another AAU team, but I told them I couldn't coach them and I had one of my assistant coaches come and coach them. They would look at me like, what the? And, oh, hell would it. It would hit the ceiling fan. But you know what? For a player to do that, it's okay. It's all right. It's just different right now. Yeah. And even a lot of the coaches right now, I'm talking to a lot of my coaches right now. They're recruiting players on parents. What are your parents like? Are they fans? You know, are they going to be here on the weekend? Are they going to be supporting us right now? Am I going to be getting an email from your family talking about your kid needs to play more right now? Or he's not playing enough to where you go to your kid and say, you're not doing everything you need to do to make sure that you're playing the amount of time that you want. Are you doing that? You know, keep your kids in check. But you have a lot of that. They're looking at parents right now. They're also looking at, to be honest with you, sadly enough, how many AAU teams did you play for? They're looking at that too, because they're feeling like if you played for 15 AAU teams in the last 6 years and you have all these jerseys in your closet, you're going to do the same thing to us right now. As soon as you get tired of us, you're going to leave and you're going to go elsewhere. Do we really want to invest in you? Are you worth the extra trouble to deal with of knowing that you could leave if you don't buy into what we're trying to do right now? We might give you 30 minutes of playing time. You want 40. Now you're going to leave and you're going to go elsewhere.
It sounds like it's become much more of like a job interview at that point. You know what I mean? Because I'll say it as a person who runs a business. If I get somebody who comes in and I look at their resume and they've been with, you know, they've got 8 jobs in the last 2 years and they've only been at each place for like 3 months here, 3 months here. I'm a lot less likely to say, no, I don't even want to call you.
You're going to come in and you're going to mess up my business.
Right. Exactly.
Business and you're going to leave me with it. Now I got to deal with it. I'm slapping myself for hiring your stupid today.
Yeah. You talked about how there's no centers anymore. There's a kid who absolutely dominated the NCAA tournament this year. And he's from Toronto, played for Purdue, and that's 7'3" Zach Edey.
He's going to have a hard time.
Yeah. So like the draft is coming up and it's been called the worst draft ever. That's what the scouts are calling it. The worst draft.
I can definitely agree with that. It's all diluted. It's diluted now. And like I said, you get a lot of mediocre players. But you're having to pick somebody. And, you know, if these teams don't sign a ton of two-way deals right now and put these boys in the G League and sort of get their feet wet a little bit. I mean, if you look back at it, what was it last year? The year before, when you start looking at it, what the most valuable player or most outstanding player, player of the year, what draft class was that? That was last year. The center from Kentucky.
Yeah.
I can't remember what his name is. And then you have the boy from Gonzaga. You're going to make me go back. I can't go on my phone right now. See, things have changed. Now I don't have to go on my computer. I can just go on my smartphone and figure out all this. I can't think of what his name was. White guy. He got drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. He made Milwaukee's camp, but none of them got drafted. And then he went to Milwaukee's G League team. But He was from Gonzaga. Come on, guys. I can't even think of his freaking name. I'm having a brain fart right now. But I'm trying to remember too. Timmy, from Gonzaga. Mustache.
Yeah.
He scored more points in the NCAA tournament than anyone else.
He's
has,
a Canadian
I think,
kid too,
so far.
Drew Timmy.
I knew he kept you around for a reason, man. No, that's you know what? It's the goatee. That's what it is. It's the goatee. But Drew Timmy, you start looking at those players, and then you have the other kid from Kentucky, and he averaged, I think, what, 14 points, 16 rebounds a game, and he got National Player of the Year, and you got all these – none of them got drafted. And the reason why, they didn't have an outside jump shot. They couldn't face the basket. They were liabilities on guarding the perimeter right now because you're at 7 foot. You know, let's look at Giannis. You're gonna guard. You're gonna have to guard. You're gonna switch up right now. You're gonna have a side pick and roll. You're gonna have to guard Kyrie eventually or Luka at one point in time. You can't give a bucket every single time. They're gonna run the same play 60, 70 times, and now they're targeting you, and it's gonna get through the league, and then all of a sudden your coach is gonna have to sit you down. So when you start doing this, but they couldn't face up. They couldn't shoot the ball outside. They weren't comfortable guarding the perimeter. And as they – can I say it? Tim Tebow of college basketball. That's what they were.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see because you're right. There have been a lot of guys over the last bunch of years that were dominant bigs in college, and then they just can't play at the NBA level because they don't have the foot speed in order to defend anyone in space. And suddenly that dominance that they had at the rim is just not there anymore. But it makes you wonder, if Shaquille O'Neal was a 20-year-old today, would teams not draft him?
Like I said, you have those players that are upper echelon in terms of being dominant. The kicker is nobody would be able to stop him offensively.
Right.
Look, if you got a guy that can score 30 points right now and he's giving up 19 right now, and you look at plus and minuses right now, okay. If you got a guy that's scoring 20 points and he's giving up 25, we can't deal with that. You got some guys in the league that don't play defense. I'm not going to say those names either. But you know a lot. You know a lot. They come to mind right now. They put up huge numbers, and they are a defensive liability, but they put up the numbers that they can. So they're plus and minuses. Plus is just offset right now. When you're scoring 40 points, you know, there's how many times are you going to match up your best perimeter player against the opponent's best perimeter player? It's not going to happen. They're going to put somebody more mobile, more agility, and more, you know, apt to guard that person. We need you to score. There's not too many players that play offense and play and give it to you on the defensive side. There's not that many out there. Those are the elite of the elite right now that are able to do that right now. So with that being said, yeah, I mean, if you can't play and face the basket right now, and if you can't guard the perimeter, you know, I mean, if you look at even Rudy right now, you know, they had him doing 360s guarding the perimeter, and this guy is long and lanky. And there was nothing he could do about it.
Literally the defensive player of the year.
You said
defensive player of the year, but you get him in a pick and roll where he has to step up, and he's a lone man on an island. He looks ridiculous.
So you said that. You said
I did. I didn't say and it. You know what? I'll take it a step further. You talk about guys that score more than that don't score as much as they allow, even though they score a ton. There's a couple of them that are going to be starting in the NBA Finals later tonight. Yeah. You know what? I'm a fan of what they can do offensively, but what they do defensively is disgusting.
No, it doesn't. But you know what? When you start looking at it, you know, you start looking at that, what, 70, is it 78? $78 billion TV contract over the next 11 years. We'll say that again. $78 billion. Come on. Let's be honest. There's certain people that make that happen, that create. You're going to have some things that, you know, like I said, we need you to do this. We don't need you to do this so much. We need you to be able to do this. And I need you to do that. You know, it's just like luck is being prepared at the opportunity given right now. That's what luck is, and performing. And, you know, you get your chance, you get your shot to be able to do it, but I'm not going to say it. Heck no. I mean, you have some of the most prolific scorers in the world that you watch them play right now. I don't really need you to get six or seven steals. I mean, what is the average, Chris? What's the average amount of steals that an NBA player averages right now? Maybe two?
2.3.
Two is your league leader.
That's it. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, yeah. let's be honest right now. Let's go block shots. You know, start looking at defensive rebounds. I mean, you know, obviously 40 points, there's no one getting 40 rebounds. There's no one getting 40 steals. There's no one getting 40 assists right now. You know, you have certain people that do their jobs well. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do your job and do it with humility and do it with grace and know what you're capable of doing, playing within yourself, exploring those boundaries. But, you know, you're looking at longevity right now. Those players that I've known, a ton of players that have gone in, you know, they got drafted higher than I did, and they weren't there longer than 3 years. You know, they didn't do their job well. You know, if you got a shooting guard that's shooting 38% from the field, come on. You're not going to be there long. And some people here are like, 38% is phenomenal. I'm like, you're a shooting guard. You need to shoot over 40, right. At least over 40. We're talking about 2%. We're talking about, you know, 2%. We're not talking about a draft like 10 or 15. We're talking about 2%. But that 2%, that's the bottom of the echelon right now, to where, guess what? You're going to go to this G League right now, and you're going to go somewhere to Spain or Madrid or, you know, Italy, and you're going to go and play there for a couple of years, and we'll give you a call. You know, there's a lot of guys that got that. We'll give you a call. Don't call us. We'll call you. And then you see the time lapse 10 years later.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of those guys.
Raptor fans are still waiting for Roko Ukić to come back, because that dude got drafted and never showed up. My man Tidwell here is a huge, huge football fan. And you, being a big, strong cat growing up in Texas, I'm guessing there must have been coaches that were trying to get you on the football field.
I give you a true story. I got in trouble in middle school. My parents sent me to a private school. I got in trouble my sixth grade year. I went to a private school for 2 years. I don't even know how they managed to afford to do that, but obviously I felt like I was important that they did that. Obviously, after the fact, they took me from my friends. But I left, went to a private school for 2 years, came back, and nobody had a clue who I was. They forgot me. Everybody moved on. They evolved and created their own clique and cliches and stuff. So, you know, for me, kind of growing up, it was one of those things where I was always a loner, so to speak, and putting the time and putting the work in, putting the effort in. But, you know, I was just thinking about this. I was in Toronto. I forgot how many months. How many months was I in Toronto? I think I was in Toronto. Lenny Wilkins was the coach for like maybe three months, and then had the option. And of course, I went to Cleveland after that. But, you know, there's a lot of life lessons out there. It just depends on what you want to take from them. If you want them or not, it depends on what you want. I don't know.
Sorry, I was just going to say, have you ever had a situation come up, though, when you were growing up? Are you a football fan growing up in Texas?
I was a Dallas Cowboy fan, and they got rid of Tom Landry.
All right. We've had enough of this conversation.
He's an Eagles fan, Skinner. I can't take it.
I'm an Eagles fan.
Tom Landry. They got rid of Tom Landry. And then after that, you know, I sort of floated around a little bit. I've always been a Packers fan. I like the Packers. I was in Milwaukee for a while. That was a team that sort of grew with me. I mean, I've liked the Seattle Seahawks for a while. All in all, I'd probably say I was I'm a Packers fan.
Okay.
All in all. But you know what? To be honest with you, I don't even have time to go do my fishing, more or less, watch football or basketball. And I got a 3 and I got a freaking 5-year-old right now. So I don't have time to even do that, more or less, go to the bathroom by myself without someone trying to make sure I'm okay. But for football, you know, I played football 1 year, my freshman year, in high school. I played football. I could not bench press the bar in 25 pounds. And this was the story when I went to a private school. I didn't lift. I didn't have that. I lost all my friends. You know, we played chess at this school. Emmanuel Lutheran. We played chess. I taught myself how to play chess. That was what they did for a pastime. I went from a graduating class of like 100 and something plus to like 6. I was the only black guy in the freaking class. Okay. Like that was enough for me. I'm looking around and everybody's looking at me. And I'm like, why are you here? I'm like, I go to school here. But I played my freshman year in high school. I played my freshman year and I had no idea what the heck I was doing. I played basketball. We played flag football, but I was a quarterback, but I was also 6'1". I was a scrawny little thing. I came in, they're like, you're tall, you go over there, you're a center. And I'm like, I played point guard. They weren't trying to hear it. In fact, my high school coach, 9th grade, lives out here. James Johnson, he lives out here. He used to scare me. He was a football coach. He was a big guy too. He never cursed, but his favorite word was crap. And he yelled it loud. And he it radiated throughout the whole entire gym. But I played 1 year and he used to give me grief because I couldn't lift the bar with a 25-pound plate on each side. I just couldn't do it. I was not physically strong enough to do it. It's like, you know, I had no pectoral muscles. I was small and scrawny. And then I played baseball and I was good at baseball. And my baseball coach, I didn't really care for him too much at that time. And then my high school coach that just came in was like, hey, you want to try AAU? You want to play in the summer? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I might try. And I said, okay, I'll play. And so I played, went from there, 3rd string, like C team, B team, I don't know, B or C. They sort of joined. It wasn't A, I'll tell you that. But, you know, 3rd string player. I like 15 kids, you know, I was a guy that I still use this terminology with my kids, 2020, man. I was the guy they put in 20 points ahead or 20 points behind. That was what I'm
right.
And, you know, and then from there, I just stuck with basketball and, you know, I got ticked off at everybody and decided to put the work in and see what happened. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but, you know, obviously my coach at the time, Harry Miller, really believed in what he saw. I didn't see it. My parents didn't see it, but I just listened to what he told me to do and I just did it. And it turned out like this, you know, got a Division I scholarship, got drafted 1st round, played and had a successful career. And then, you know, had 2 daughters that won national championships, 1 future Olympian, you know, it turned out pretty well. It turned out pretty well. I'm not going to say that it was all my DNA. You know, I want to say that. I can't say that, you know, but, I don't think I would change anything of what I did, even my past mistakes to all my successes. I don't think I want to change it. I think it sort of created the man that I am right now and it created the things that I have right now. I have an unbelievable wife. I have 2 little ones right now and all my kids are healthy. They all want to play sports. That's not me. I told my 13-year-old son, I said, if you want to be in the ballet, if you want to be in a musical, I said, you're more than welcome to. I don't care what you do. I just want you to give 110%. He just looked at me like, nah, Dad, nah, no, I'm going to play a sport. So he's playing basketball now. In fact, right before I got on here, that's what we were doing. So we got back. But, you know, I'll say that, you know, God is definitely good. I've been blessed. But I don't think I would change anything. You know, I got a lot of mistakes. I try to make sure my kids don't repeat any of them. If you need to know what not to do, I can definitely tell you what not to do. Just do the complete opposite. You'll be fine.
Listen, we're up against the clock and we got to run. Before we do, I want to ask you this. One of my pals who, you know, I chat with him any time I get a chance is former NBA tough guy Gary Trent Sr. And yep. Gary and I were hanging out together in Toronto last fall. And
hold on, you said it wrong. You said
you know it wrong. You know when you put the scene on it, huh?
How did I say it wrong? It's my shirtless all the time friend Gary Trent Sr.
Yeah, he doesn't like wearing shirts. He doesn't like wearing shirts. That's legit. But he mentioned you as being one of the guys he most liked to bang with because he's like, yeah, man, Skinner was always fun. Who do you think of when you look back at your playing days? Who was the guy that you said, Oh, that's who I matched up with. All right. This is, I'm going to get bruised up, but this will be a lot of fun.
But what people don't get, it was every night.
Yeah, no, I know.
It wasn't one person. You had one person. It's something that you guys can relate to. Now, we're not going to do this here in Texas, hockey. You have that one bruiser. Your job is to go and pick the biggest guy over there and beat the living right. crap out of him. That's your job right now. For us, it was every night. I mean, there was that saying, no blood, no foul. Right. You know, we didn't call these weak tic-tac fouls right now. If a tooth wasn't hanging, you know, by the nerve out of your mouth right now, and you didn't tuck it back in, and your orbital socket wasn't, you know, your eyeball was just drooping, and you just crammed it back in, you continued to play. That's how it was. You know, you start looking at Trent. I was talking with Reggie Slater. Even, you know, you start looking at, like, Antonio McDyess, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you start looking at all these guys that were huge and just loved to bang. That was their job as a power forward. Now I moved to a little bit of small forward and center, but as a power forward, that was your job. You were supposed to that was the Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason of, if you come back in here, you're going to leave on a stretcher and your career is going to be short, young fella. Yeah. And he's like, you ain't talking to me. Like, I let the NCAA and score. And sure enough, you know, crash cart came out, neck brace came out, and we told you. And it was like that. The game has changed, but I also see it now that the game, they're going to move back to being a little bit more defensively oriented right now. You can't have a 200-point all-star yes. game. That's bad for business, $78 billion. But, you know, they're going to get a little bit more defensive oriented instead of just the non-tic-tac. I think they figured out that players can score the ball if they want to score the ball. And now it's a free-for-all. And, you know, the tide doesn't necessarily go to the runner right now. So I'm hoping they get a little bit more physical in terms of what they try to do. And refs understand a little bit more than changing the charge rule more offensively. I think it was, what, 60-40, and now it's like 30-70 now for offense. And it's just changed so much. That's the one thing that I miss. You know, you see these little flagrant ones right now. I'm like, that's just a normal foul.
Yeah.
Like, take the ball out on the sideline. But, you know, they're trying to obviously protect their players, and you have high-dollar players that are there, and you got to protect them to a certain extent. But, you know, they're getting paid more, but we did a lot more banging when it came down to it. But that was a highlight. You know, if I didn't go home with a couple of bruises and, you know, a contusion and a couple of ice bags, you know, I don't feel like I did my job. So, you know, I try to take it easy on my players when we do a little one-on-one or two-on-two, and they look at me like I'm a piece of meat. And I'm like, it's still in there. Like, I still. Every once in a while, one of them gets thrown and flung across, and they look at me like, that foul. I'm like, dude, I didn't even touch you. So, you know, definitely. Gary was definitely that guy. He was the epitome of there were tough players then. He was that tough guy right now that you definitely had to watch what you said to him, because there was no hesitation. You know, a clear backhand across the face was a flagrant one. You know, it's a flagrant one. You get the ball out, you know, and you worry about getting ejected, and that's your, what, $5,000 fine at the time. And now that's exponential right now. But, you know, you pay more, you got to pay more, you know, so that's just how the league is right now. But, you know, I'm not mad at it. It's an evolution. It's definitely growing, but I definitely see an international type of league happening in the near future right now. Don't quote me on that, but it has to, because the influence that you have of international players in this league and how impactful they are right now. Why wouldn't you? That's a generating money stream that they haven't even tried to touch yet. So once that happens right now, you know, sky's the limit.
Interesting. Are you saying that there is going to be one day some other competing league with the NBA?
Wouldn't you think so?
It's tough, I mean, they've tried it with other sports. You know what I mean?
Like, what I'm saying is not another league right now, but they're going to start to combine a lot of these European teams right now. I don't know how they would do it right now, but you have a lot of, when you have 150 plus European players that are playing, and I'll say one of the best basketball leagues in the world, When you have that right now, you got to look at where these players are coming from. And you got to look at the development of these players and why they're being so successful. I mean, there was a huge gap when you start looking at 96 Dream Team. There was a huge gap. The games were, you know, 140 to like 19, you know, 140 to 40. It's not like that anymore. You know, it's very balanced, and you're having to work right now. It's not just going in and dominating right now. You're having some very competitive games right now because you're playing against these guys, you know, for 100 plus games a season right now. You know exactly, they're getting the same development, you're getting the same. That's like going to a school right now that has unlimited resources, and you have another school right now that has very limited resources, and they're competing from scholastics. There's no competition when you have that. You have one side that just is going to dominate the resources they have available right now. Now you're starting to look at it. These resources are starting to balance out a little bit right now. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you start a European league / NBA league right now, where you go over for a month and you play Madrid and you play some of these top echelon teams right now, and you go through it and you come back over and you get that international focus, you get that international publication right now. And now you talk about just Amazon and NBC and all these different, you know, syndicates. You're talking about 78 million right now. That's just here. What about broadcasting and telebroadcasting across the globe right now, watching your favorite players? Like, you know, why wouldn't you? Now, how to structure that, I'll leave that to the guys that are way above my pay grade. But
Adam Silver said for years now that his dream is, you know, right now the only team in the NBA outside of the continental United States is Toronto. But he has talked about wanting a team in Mexico. He has talked about wanting teams in Europe. He's talked about wanting teams in Asia. And he said the only reason we haven't done it yet is because you need enough teams in each of those regions to have their own division or their own conference so they can play against each other. And then when they travel, it's like you said, they're coming over for like 3-4 weeks on a road trip. Yep. But it's the same thing for like if the New York Knicks are going over to England, then they're going to be there for a month, you know? So
you remember 4K TVs?
What's
you
that?
Had a 4K TV. I said you had a 4K TV, but you had no broadcasting channels.
Right. Right.
And they didn't want to make the broadcasting channels because they were only limited on 4K TVs. So it's what came first, the chicken or the egg right now. It's just the first group that actually starts to do that, it's going to grow. It can't not grow. But you know, when you start looking at it, the structure and the system is there. Now how you incorporate that and how you maneuver and make it fine to be able to play and jet lag and all these different things like that. It becomes global then. And it is a global sport. But when you start talking about a company, you look at these big, you know, you look at these big corporations right now, and you look at how long majority of these corporations last and how long they do last, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, 60 years before they just kind of die out and something else takes over and do that. You know, it's just endless right now with the NBA, even with the NFL right now. Soccer is making a huge draw here. It's starting to become bigger and bigger here. You go overseas, you know, they're not talking a lot about basketball. We're talking about, you know, football. They're talking about rugby right now. They're talking about cricket, you know, different things. So it's how do you cater to certain demographics and how do you cater to them? You know, you go over to England, they might not be interested. They're interested in, you know, cricket or another sport, soccer. They're not interested in basketball right now, but it's starting to grow. Just like women's volleyball. Let me go back to that. It's starting to grow. Two huge professional leagues that are growing right now. Love is about to start up right now. And, you know, it's just going to go from there. So, you know, hundreds of thousands of volleyball players now have something to look forward to and to play towards.
Didn't they have, was it, which team was it? 93,000 fans.
That was at Nebraska. They played a volleyball game outside their football arena, and they did. It's growing.
Wow.
It's growing. Wow. It's definitely growing. You know, when you start looking at that, they broke the record for volleyball attendance. It's definitely growing right now. I mean, you have over 500,000 volleyball players in the country right now at a young age right now. And they want to know, like, what's my end game? Do I have an opportunity to play professional? Do I have an opportunity to be able to do that? I remember my sister played volleyball where you could only score on your service. And now it's changed. So the game's evolved and it's gotten bigger. You have more clubs. You have more organizations. You have more girls that are serious about it. And you have more schools that are starting to respect the fact that, you know, women can definitely dominate in these type of sports. And they're definitely doing it right now. I mean, I'm very surprised, even with the WNBA right now. And I get Caitlin Clark and you have Reese and you have all these girls that are coming in now. But you can see it's starting to grow. It's taking some time.
Yeah, finally. Finally.
Now, before, you know, you're hemorrhaging $10 million plus. But now they're starting to figure out how to stand on their own feet and be able to do that and promote their league. And that's the biggest thing. You know, you pay more when you can promote and you can earn more, you know, is when you can get more. And that's kind of how it works. And you look at how the NBA has done it right now. People just need to continue to keep supporting it. But it also gives the younger population some type of goal setting. You know, everybody needs hope. Somebody wants to have a goal set of this is where I want to end up as. I don't want to just play 6 years and know that I can't go play anytime after that. Now I got to go get a real job and pay taxes. You know, if I love doing something, let me see how long I can do it.
Can you believe it's the first year ever the WNBA now has chartered flights? They don't have to sit and coach. Like, that's crazy. Imagine if your whole career you were sitting with the fans everywhere you rode. Like, it's a different world now for them.
It really is. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it grows right now. I don't have any basketball players. None. They're all volleyball. I don't think the 5-year old I don't think the 5-year old knows it, but she's not gonna escape me, my Ryan. My wife plays volleyball at Michigan, so she's definitely not gonna
escape. See, this is my theory. This is why there's so many more of these kids that are taking it up. It's because you big ass athletes are making big ass athletes. Right?
It's the meat and vegetables. They're being imported from God knows where right now. It is. I mean, but it's everybody's getting bigger. You're getting stronger. You're getting more massive. There's a girl right now. I won't say the name, but we were talking about her, and she's on the Olympic team, and she is just massive. My wife's like, I didn't realize how tall and massively just not fat, just massive, strong muscle. And I'm just like, you never had to go up against any of that when you played. She's like, no, you can just see it. You know, you look at Dana Redke right now. She's 6'8". She's 6'8". You can't teach height.
No.
You can't teach height. You can't teach skill. I can't teach height. 6'8". You're seeing all these things now. You're seeing DSs and even volleyball's changing the rules, but you're seeing all these DSs now that are 6'2", 6'3", setter, 6'2", 6'3". The setter at UT right now, you know, she's 6'3". She's 6'3". That's crazy. And they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's all our fault. I'm sorry.
You know, before we wrap, the NBA finals are getting started tonight. So give us a quick prediction. Dallas or Boston?
You really want to know? I'll be honest with you. I think Dallas is going to take this.
Woo!
I think Dallas is going to take it. It's just a
I'm
different
okay dimension. With that.
It's just a different dimension. Now you got to understand, you're looking at the two best teams on each conference right now that are playing right now.
I don't think Dallas is the best team. I think Dallas has gotten hot ever since the trade deadline.
There's a lot of teams. Let's be honest. There's a lot of teams out there. There's a lot of players out there that should be in the NBA right now that aren't for whatever reason, whether they don't have a team concept or they can't follow instructions or rules or they're just, you know, a loose cannon when it comes to it. But I see Dallas taking this first game. You know, me making a prediction right now, don't take this to Vegas right now. Don't call me and talking about I lost, you know, my house and I mortgaged this and my firstborn. Don't do that. I see Dallas taking this one right now. And you start seeing it, how they're playing right now and their continuity right now and even their guard play right now. They want to play up. They can play up tempo or low tempo, mid tempo. I mean, when you start looking at like Holiday and you start looking at Horford that's been there for God knows how long. What is this? It's what, 18th year, 19th year? When you start looking at that, they have the experience. They definitely have the experience right now. But we'll see if they can keep up with that pace and if they can shoot the ball. If Boston can shoot the ball as consistently, and I'll say if Horford can keep consistently shooting the ball the way that he has right now in terms of stretching out that four right now and the way that they're playing defense, it's going to be a tough game. But we're still looking at consistency. These teams are going to start targeting your weakest points right now, and they're going to capitalize on them every single time. We're not going to just run one or two sets and switch it up. We're going to run the same switch over and over again until you either figure it out. And when you figure it out, we're going to go an opposite way. And if we score on it, we're going to keep running it until you stop it consistently. But it's going to be a definite up and down game right now. I just see I'm going Mavs. Maybe because it's Texas. I got to serve my Texas team right now. I got to serve my Texas team. I just got to do that. I mean, if it was Toronto, if you say Mavericks or Toronto, what would you do?
I'm a total loser Raptor fan, and I can't even pretend not to be. But you know what? The thing is, I'm down with Dallas winning mainly because Boston fans are insufferable. If they win, you'll never hear the end of it. So I am totally down with Dallas winning it. If I'm Boston, though, I'm going to do exactly what you just hinted at. I'm going to pick and roll Kyrie to death.
Boston's been shooting the ball well outside. They've been shooting the shot. They've been hitting long balls. They've been getting to the rim. I mean, they've been their mid-range, their threes, and finishing around the basket has been phenomenal on what they've done right now. It's just if Dallas can control the tempo, if they can control the tempo, they're going to have a hard time trying to do that. But, yeah, if they can put them in pick and rolls, they can do that, but you know, Luka's gonna search those calls. We're talking about another European player. He's gonna get those calls that he wants to get right now. That's gonna be the thing. You got that dynamic duo right now, and they know their roles, they know their responsibilities, and they can both score the ball anytime they want to at will. It's gonna come down to role players, I think, in terms of what their role players do right now. If they get the rebounds they need to get, if they get the defensive stops on the mismatches, they shouldn't have a problem. But it's going to be a competitive game. I mean, it's going to come down. I don't think it's going to be a 90-60 game. It's going to come down to defensive stops and turnovers, but who can hit the outside jump shots. That mid-range to long-distance range right now, those spot-ups on drawing kicks, if they can hit those, somebody's going to open it up. So,
screw both of you guys. I say it goes the distance, and I say Boston wins. Listen, here's the things that I've learned out of this conversation. And the first thing and foremost is that if you need somebody to never drop a name, Brian Skinner is the guy.
My dad told me a long time ago, it's good to be seen and not heard.
100%. That is a true statement that more people need to adhere to, my friend.
You know what? Here's the last comment I'm going to make on the finals. Luka Doncic, to me, is so frustrating because he is the Cleveland Browns, Jim Brown of the NBA. You know what he's going to do every single time, and you still can't stop him. Power sweep right. You knew it was coming. The defense knew it was coming. They couldn't stop him. Luka, right hand to the basket, left hand pull up. We know what's coming, and we still can't stop him.
But there's always been guys like that, though, right? I mean, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you knew as soon as he turned, that sky hook was coming, and there was nothing you could do about it.
Well, the thing about Dallas I like is they give the ball. They share the ball. If they draw and kick, they're hitting the open guy right now, which is going to come down to their role players. And I'll say role players that's outside of Kyrie and Luka right now. They hit those shots and they do their jobs. I mean, they know exactly what they're supposed to do, but they share the ball. You know, it's not that one-on-one right now. They pick opportunities and they surgically dissect the defense with what the defense gives them. So we're just going to have to see right now. You said game seven, Boston. I'm going to say it's going to be six, but you know.
All right, we'll follow up. We'll follow up on that.
We'll call you on it.
Nice gentleman.
I love it. Okay. And you're absolutely right about the role players, because before Dallas went and got Gafford and Washington, they were a sub 500 team. They added a couple of role playing bigs and suddenly they took off to the moon. They had all the skill, but they didn't have the guys doing the dirty work.
They go straight to the glass and they don't need to score 20, 30 points. They go to the glass. They do all the dirty work and they do all the things that people don't expect them to do.
You never have to call a play for them. They don't care. They're still going to contribute. No. You got to love guys like that.
And that's what you're looking for right now. So it would be great. Obviously, you know, you got a lot of Kyrie haters out there. But he's doing something that a lot of other players that they aren't there now. They're in Cabo. They're in Rio. they're hanging out right now. So it'd be good to definitely see him be successful with all the controversy he's had in the last couple of years. To see him prevail. But, you know, it's just, it's deeper for him. I think it's deeper for him. He can score the ball whenever he wants to, but he's perfectly okay with distributing and getting other guys opportunities to excel and see, and that's what I'm looking for right now. Now, Boston, tons of great players, but we can see if they can put two and two together and see if they can make it happen. It's going to be exciting regardless.
It's not Boston I hate. It's their fans. Thank you so much, Brian Skinner.
I appreciate you guys. Chris, Donnie, I appreciate you guys having me on the show. Definitely, we'll follow up. I'll definitely give you a call, Chris, and let you know.
I'll be man enough to go light on you after you lose. That's all right. That's good. That's all good. I got you, boo.
Hey, continued success with the coaching and good luck to your daughter in France. We'll be watching.
Yep, I'll be watching too. I'll be there too. All right, guys.
You better get your ass on a plane. All right, Skinner. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, later.
All right. There he goes, everybody. That is NBA veteran tough guy, Brian Skinner. Played for like half the league. And just a fun guy, super intelligent guy, as you can tell, articulate. And a guest that I love having on this show.
There you go. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. He's going to lose, though.
You guys should have made a wager. Tid, what you want to plug?
Listen, we all know the usual stuff. You can always check it out over at the Tid Talk channel. You can also go to Live Audio Wrestling on YouTube. Lots of stuff going up there. Brand new episode. Had a great conversation with the legendary Moondog Manson that is up there right now. Always new content going up almost on a daily basis. So go to the Law-Live Audio Wrestling over on YouTube. Make sure that you like and subscribe. We've got a bunch of new ideas and some new stuff coming out. It's going to be fantastic. Always you can hear it as well in the podcast form over on SNME Radio and all of your other podcast providers. So outside of that, I'm also going to be checking out some Neo Pro Wrestling this weekend.
Nice.
So we can go Neo Pro, which is always going to be fun. And they've got a fantastic card coming up. So, and we're also coming up with them as well. The Jesse Scott Invitational is going to be happening later on this year. So we'll keep everybody informed on that one.
Love it.
As we go forward. Outside of that, no. That's it. That's all.
That's all.
No.
This Sunday on Sunday Night's Main Event on SundayNightsMainEvent.com and TSN Radio, I will be doing a one-on-one interview with Brian Clark, formerly known as Adam Bomb in the WWE and known as Wrath in WCW. I'm very much looking forward to catching up with him for the first time in many, many, many years. So that should be a lot of fun. Make sure you check that out. There's a guy, Tid, in the history of wrestling. He's one of those guys that makes you scratch your head and go, he should have been more. He should have been more.
There's a few of them.
Yeah. He's on that list.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a guy with the name Morgan.
Yeah. Sean Morgan. Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? Listen, I got a question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
We can get one of these Black Bork hats.
Yeah.
With an old throwback patch from the O Show. Oh. Remember those shirts? The Keep Calm and F Yo Hat shirts?
Oh, my God.
Can we get them to do a Keep Calm and F Your Hat?
That is a throwback. That is for sure. Those Keep Calm memes just went out like 14 years ago, dude. What do you care?
What do I care?
Bring it all back.
Exactly. 100%.
His name is Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell. I am Donnie DeSilva. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this extended version of the Godfathers of Podcasting. We'll see you next time.
Peace.